Hi, everybody. This is Armand DeMille with you with The Positive Mind. WBAI 99.5 FM, discussing things that matter to you. And today, as promised, we are talking about intermittent explosive disorder. Yes, intermittent explosive disorder. And in the studio with me, good friends, Dr. Kent Robert Shaw and Dr. Christine Ulrich, one of my researchers, and who will be contributing with us today. And we're with you here on WBAI. Very, very interesting stuff. Intermittent explosive disorder. Everyone's heard of road rage or read newspaper stories about a usual calm and responsible person who snaps and commits a violent act. Some people lose their tempers in this way repeatedly and dramatically, causing serious emotional or physical harm to others. Sometimes they hurt themselves. It's a pattern in which tension builds until an explosion brings relief, followed eventually by regret, embarrassment, or guilt. Now, that's intermittent explosive disorder. By definition, it's an uncommon disorder of the brain characterized by explosive outbursts of behavior, throwing, breaking things, inflicting physical harm on others. It's disproportionate to the provocation. It's an impulse control disorder. Sometimes it's linked to epilepsy, you know, temporal lobe epilepsy. In the last few years, research has been shedding more and more light on this condition. It's defined by attacks of impulsive rage, again, out of proportion to the immediate provocation. Now, the person who has the rageful outburst, they don't think it's out of proportion. I saw you look at me that way, boom. See? But it seems to blow up out of nowhere. In fact, some people have said it takes about 22 minutes for it to kind of boil and pass. The American Psychiatric Association definition includes all such behavior that can't be explained by other things. Now, Kent Robert Shaw, who is with us, Kent, there are other things where people explode, right?
Absolutely. Where anger outbursts is part of other psychiatric disorders.
Such as?
Well, one of the most common would be bipolar disorder, where there's severe mood swings within the within someone's life. And during a time when they're having mania or hypomania, one of the aspects of it, irritability, these people often have a very short fuse and losing their tempers constantly.
And so this irritable, this is usually a kind of depressed person who is manic. This is also manic depression, which we call bipolar, which always makes me think of bears. And we have this kind of person who is has got this agitation that's always present, always ready to explode. And he or she at the drop of a hat suddenly can take this further out. That's bipolar. That's not intermittent explosive disorder.
That's right. That's right. Because usually there's a certain irritability that's going on. And this implies that the person is relatively calm. And this is a sort of explosive reaction followed up, as they say, often by regret and embarrassment. Whereas the bipolar person, since they're in this irritable state, they most likely think that it was totally justified afterward because they're in this place where everything's getting on their nerves and they're very grouchy.
So the person who is explosive, and this, my friends, is pay attention to this because, you know, if someone has had IED or someone has intermittent explosive disorder, if they hit you once, they're going to hit you again, no matter what form the disorder is in. People who are violent will be violent again, and this violence tends to reappear. It's rare. I mean, it must be one out of a million cases where a person only has one violent explosion in their life. But people who tend to have it more than other people, you'll see it. Now, you'll see it if they have this intermittent explosive disorder. They could have it with other people in the streets, but it boils. You can almost see when somebody has intermittent explosive disorder, sometimes they'll be picking on you. You know, they'll talk to you, or they'll talk to you in such a way that you hear an irritation in their voice. Almost imagine a father chastising a child, and he's really, the father's out for bear that day. And the father's saying, you dead, da, ba, 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 and you, ba, ba. No matter what you say, it doesn't matter. And he keeps getting closer and closer. And no matter what you say, it doesn't matter. He's going to whack you. he's coming after you. It's almost like he's possessed by the devil. That's the intermittent explosive disorder, which could be also, you know, other things like substance abuse. We don't consider that intermittent explosive disorder, or dementia. You know, when people have dementia, sometimes they become violent. But we're talking about something else, and we're talking about intermittent explosive disorder, and the more common and more destructive than anyone has supposed. One study of several hundred people in Baltimore found that a surprising 11% of the people qualified for the diagnosis of intermittent explosive disorder. 11%. And that's why you shouldn't live in Baltimore. And I mean, you know, it's not like that in New York. Here it was like 9%. They're about the same for men and women. No big difference. Blacks and whites, no big difference. Only age made a difference. Younger people more susceptible to intermittent explosive disorder than older people. In a study of 1,300 psychiatric outpatients in Rhode Island, they had nearly 15% of the people had explosive disorders, right? 15%. So Rhode Island, stay away from it. Baltimore, stay away from it. Unless you need some action. Because there are a lot of people who like people who are explosive. They like people who are violent. They like people who have these explosions. I mean, there are people who like to hang around with the Hell's Angels just because there's a chance there's danger, and danger could be very attractive. Among 6,000 participants in a national survey, the average incident ran about 7%. Now, that's more normal. 7% of the people have intermittent explosive disorder. Be careful for Rhode Island and Baltimore. You don't want to get a cop angry at you there because he may have IED. People with more severe cases have as many as 56 attacks in their lives, during which they do an average property damage of $1,600. Right? They destroy things, $1,600. And at least, remember, in your life, you have 56 explosive incidents. And out of those 56, 23 mean that someone required medical attention. So we're talking pretty serious stuff. In this study, people with intermittent explosive disorder were more likely to be young and slightly more likely to be male. The vast majority in other studies were diagnosed with at least one disorder, the most common being generalized. But what causes the attacks? This is what the question is. What makes them come around? You know, and that's one of the things we're going to be looking at today. This is Armand DeMille with Kent Robertshaw and Christina Ulrich. Doctors both. We're looking at what it is. You know, we're looking at stuff that we see all the time and why we see it and maybe what we could do about it.
Well, I think that, you know, one of the things in terms of the treatment of intermittent explosive disorder is to have people get some degree of control over their angry impulses. So they get some kind of understanding that even though they're starting to feel red and see red with an incident, that they have choices about whether they're going to act out angrily or not. So part of the treatment of this disorder is trying to get people to, you know, like count 10 or something like that, the old, you know, when you feel explosive like this, to have other choices other than acting out angrily towards yourself or somebody else.
One of the things I like about therapy and why I think therapy is a good idea is it helps you break down things as you feel it, you know? So imagine that an explosive disorder episode, which would be an IEDE, an episode is kind of like a volcano. At first, you don't think anything is wrong, but you feel a little stirring in your gut. And you may feel a little tension building. And you notice yourself becoming tense. Now, there's a point with this eruption of lava that's coming up that you can't stop it anymore. Once it gets past, let's say it gets past your heart level, that's it. You're goner. Mm-hmm. So the idea is to identify it somewhere before then in your body, to identify the number of things that go wrong. And what are the kind of things that are going wrong? I mean, what's going on in your body is a whole bunch of chemical changes related to, well, let's talk about the chemistry of it. What goes on, Christina?
What they know is that serotonin seems to play a role in the whole thing, and also testosterone. That might be that we see slightly more males having it than females. And stress hormones as well. Everything builds up. You get ready for fight.
So what would make a person have more testosterone, lower serotonin, and stress hormones? I mean, is that what we see? We see that we know this is taking place in the body?
Yes.
Well, there's no way to identify it, though.
That's true. But as you said, I think you gave a beautiful description how you can sense in your body if something creeps up. It slowly creeps up, and you have to get an awareness when it starts.
I know it's very hard to do because sometimes if you have a therapeutic situation, you could evoke this by having a person, by talking to a person, by giving them an imaginary situation, and then by having them do things that'll change their own body chemistry, like hyperventilating or tightening their bodies, and actually inducing this so they could feel it to become aware of it. So the non-medical treatment of this is possible. Let's take a look at one other aspect of it. Researchers have been exploring what may be a biological significant distinction between what they call hyperarousal aggression, hyperarousal driven aggression, hyperarousal, which means high arousal, you know, mm-hmm. Hyper means high, and uncontrollable outbursts of the kind that occur in this intermittent explosive disorder, and hypo-arousal-driven. Now, hypo usually means too little. So, now, hypo-arousal-driven explosions, they're cold-blooded. They have a kind of a self aggrandizing, and they're associated with other kinds of antisocial behaviors. The cold-hearted blow-up is scary. That usually indicates something. What does that usually indicate?
Well, usually that's associated with a personality disorder. When we were talking about how this other diagnoses look like intermittent, I had mentioned bipolar before. One of the other diagnoses that can look like this is sociopathy, criminal behavior, or antisocial behavior. The Tony Sopranos of the world, the people that seem to have a very little lack of empathy for other people. We know that the kind of aggression that goes along with people like that, that they generally have very low arousal rates. And so they're often, from childhood on and adolescence on, driven to very high energy, high action kinds of things. These are the kids that are doing juvenile delinquency. They're jumping off of bridges. They're doing graffiti and the like. It's thought to be that very little, quote unquote, turns them on, gets them excited, gets their blood going. And so they need to gravitate towards behaviors like this. And with this would be a cold and somewhat calculated act of aggression, which doesn't cause, as Kristen was saying before, about the kind of arousal that goes on where your heart's beating fast and you feel your blood pressure going when you're having road rage or you're upset. It's a kind of very cool kind of calculated response to something.
For those Deadwood fans who've seen Swearingen, I can't pronounce his name, Swearingen kills somebody with a knife. You know, here he is, this guy who's fairly calm most of the time, walking around fairly angry. But when he decides to kill somebody, it's just so simple. It's like it doesn't matter. It's a life that you just put out. Now, does anger go behind that? You know, sometimes with these other disorders, there's no anger behind it. With the intermittent explosive disorder, there's always anger. Anger is there and it's felt, you know, and it explodes. Like I said, it's like a volcano. And when that volcano comes up and that lava comes to the surface, you just hope you're at a distance. Now, if you're like some people I know, you begin challenging the person. The person starts coming at you and you say, "You can't talk to me that way. I'm not going to let you talk to me that way." That's one way to guarantee you're going to get physicalized. And a lot of times when we see people who are victims of physical abuse, you see exactly that. You see a person who was kind of collaborating in the violence by seeing the person about to blow up and knowing that they will blow up. knowing that they will hit you, knowing that you could show them the bruises on your body later and hold them accountable, because the people who do blow up feel remorse, because the ones with intermittent explosive disorder feel bad later. So there are people I know who, when they sense it coming, they actually welcome it in. They actually provoke it. And they say, come on and get me. You're going to hit me? Come on, let me see you hit me. And those people are just as violent. They have intermittent explosive disorder by proxy. That.
You know, we had mentioned about things that look like this, and certainly alcohol and substance abuse causes people to be disinhibited, and usually part of the disinhibition, the lack of impulse control that goes with alcohol use, would be explosive anger. Again, that wouldn't be intermittent explosive, because again, if you only explode during alcohol, that means you have an alcohol problem. But going along with what Armand was just saying, studies would show that not only when alcoholics get angry with somebody, what we also know is that usually the other person at the bar or involved in an episode, there's usually a normal human, and I would argue animal, response when somebody's being very aggressive. You see it in the animal kingdom when there's fighting. If you look at the PBS or something, the subservient, the smaller animal, will start backing down and has a self-preservation. What studies would show is that the person under alcohol, they don't show that normal response of backing down. So often, if somebody's drinking, they'll be explosively angry, but the other person, rather than appropriately saying, hey, you have a knife, I don't, or you have a gun and I don't, or you've got three buddies of yours and I'm by myself, under an alcohol state, I'm not showing the proper insight and judgment and backing down appropriately when everything should say danger.
Well, I guess you're making a point, and I'm sure you'll agree with this, Christine, that if you're with somebody who is showing, whose lava is boiling, there's only one response.
You back down.
Get out of the way.
Get out of the way and don't argue. Doesn't make sense, because a person can't argue in that moment. They are overwhelmed by their emotions, by their arousal. So don't argue, step back, leave the room, go away.
And find some way out of it, because the person who is being explosive is out of their mind.
Mm-hmm.
Now, that doesn't mean that sometimes you don't get a kick out of it, because there are a couple of advantages to having somebody else have the intermittent explosive disorder. One such kick, for example, if you're passive-aggressive. Let's say you never get angry at anybody, and you get a boyfriend who's intermittent explosive disorder. So now you go around and you're the nicest person. Everybody feels sorry for you. Everybody looks at you and they say, oh, what's a poor girl doing like with a guy like this? And then you say, I love him. And they say, oh, you poor girl, as if you can get away with this. What you really mean is, I hired him. You know, I hired him, because be careful. If you offend me, all you have to do is drop a little hint on the person who's got the explosive disorder, and they will explode. All it needs is a little bit of a firecracker, you know, to get it going. So you could say, let's say you get angry, you're passive-aggressive, and you get angry at some man. You just simply say to your boyfriend, you know, that guy was looking at me in a sexual way, and I really resent it. And you can be guaranteed your guy is going to find some way to explode. It's going to just feed the fuel, you know, it's going to go in there, it's going to get to it. So passive-aggressive people are very often related to people with intermittent explosive disorder, because the person with the intermittent explosive disorder, in a way, contains some of the rage that they're feeling. Much better if the passive-aggressive person would be able to identify their own anger and deal with that, and not have to hire a killer to walk around with them. Not that all IED people are killers, but if you've got intermittent explosive disorder, Get treatment, because there's no good you're doing on this planet. There's nothing you're doing. You know, they send you off to the army very often. They'll take you out of the prisons, and they'll say, oh, a guy who could explode and kill, we'll send him in the army, because he's good for the army. But you're not doing anything for anybody. So this is a chance to get a treatment. There are a few different ways of getting treatment. One way, as we said, is psychotherapy. helps you explore what all this stuff is about inside you, where it comes from, identifying it when it happens. But then they also treat it with medical stuff, don't they, Kent?
Yeah, as we were alluding to before, there's certainly three categories that we understand biologically is related to impulsivity and anger. And the one with low serotonin is the most well-known and well-researched. I mean, in animals, they can artificially lower animal serotonin, and it'll cause animals to react more angrily and more aggressively. So it is hypothesized that people whose serotonin is sometimes too low, they may be more prone to this. And clearly the category of medication we've talked about quite a bit on this show, the serotonergic agents like Prozac, Paxil, and Zoloft, that increases people's serotonin, and it is thought the increased serotonin helps people get, again, a little bit of a pause between the angry feelings and both the ability to think about the angry feelings and have more appropriate responses, and perhaps even lessen the degree that the anger is coming over somebody so that there's just less of a fight to explode because the anger is just less pushing at the person.
But Kent, we've heard so many stories about young teenagers or young people who are given these antidepressants who wind up being violent. How does that happen?
Well, again, I think the problem with antidepressants, and it's very complicated, has to do with the fact that with a certain percentage of people, antidepressants can cause people with bipolar, not the polar bear that Aman was talking about, but the bipolar disorder, the manic depression. Antidepressants with bipolars can cause them to be more irritable and more manic. So even though in a straight-ahead, unipolar, depressed person, most likely that will increase their ability to show self-control and less anger, paradoxically, these medications with bipolar disorder can cause people to be more irritable and more impulsive. So that's why you have to get the proper diagnosis with a good psychopharmacologist.
Arman, I wonder what happens if you have two people with the disorder.
Man, what do you think? Right?
Very interesting.
It's very interesting. First of all, let's go. There are two places that suggests. I've seen couples, you know, who both are violent. You know, where both people are violent. In fact, we had somebody come in here for treatment recently, and they beat each other up all the time. They were equally matched physically. The woman was about 170 pounds muscular, you know, and the guy was around 165 pounds, not as muscular, but between the two of them, they were equally matched. And they had a lot of physical fights. A lot. I mean, they punched each other, they hit each other with things, they did this a great deal. They came in for treatment not because of the fights. They came in for treatment because they were feeling separate from each other, so I had to get them a therapist. Now, here's the problem with getting them a therapist. Every therapist demanded that they stop hitting each other. And I remember trying to assign them to a therapist, and the therapist said, I can't let you hit each other and treat you. So they were stuck. They said, no, we're going to hit each other because that's the way we deal with our anger. We want to work with other stuff. And they actually couldn't find treatment. So some people are perfectly satisfied with hauling off and doing it with each other, you know. Also, I want to say that it is not always the man who's the aggressor. Very often a woman who is feeling aggressive, especially if it's hormonally related, and she goes off on a tirade, can be do a lot of damage to a passive man, because many men will just take it, you know, and they'll just put up their arms and defend themselves, but still be provoking it in some kind of way, and the men become the victims, but the men don't get hospitalized. A man wouldn't go to a hospital and say, look at what happened to me. The women would. So the statistics generally show that women are more victims of violence, but I am not sure if there's not a whole different statistic that would happen if we just showed the existence of violence.
I know a man who scheduled his business trips around the PMS of his wife.
Huh. So, and I guess when we're saying PMS, let's be fair about this, he is saying, you know, in effect, I know during that time she has a difficult time, and I don't know how to handle it. That's what he's saying. I don't know how to handle it. And so, therefore, I'm going to try to do my trips, you know, around this time, which must be excruciatingly painful to her, because to be left alone with that, on one hand. On the other hand, there is a case for people who have severe PMS seem to have it more in the presence of a mate than they have it if they're alone. Mm-hmm. So it may actually work, you know?
That's interesting. People seem to develop strategies to deal with it instead of getting treatment.
Well, one of the strategies for dealing with this pent-up, I mean, let's not just talk about PMS, men's life of frustrations that they carry. I mean, the average man, it amazes me how much control we have. If you think of where we came from, swinging in the trees, having axes to deal with, you know, having teeth, you know, once we were all the way back there with some relative of some great killer, it's in our bones. The amount of control that we exercise is remarkable. I mean, Iraq notwithstanding, we are doing a fabulous job as a human race in getting by without killing each other. Because the other way, it was, we are born to do it the other way. We're born to just kill each other, take each other's houses, steal each other's children, take each other's wives, you know, take their possessions. That's the way we're made. So I think we're doing a wonderful job. However, some people, it seems, never did the job. They just stuck with those genes and stuck with those chemicals that just keep creeping up on them. And situationally, they keep adding and adding to the situation of stress added to it. You know, among intermittent explosive disorder was very high in boys aged 13 and girls aged 17. The equal amount. It happened equally at girls age 17, but it happened much more with boys at age 13. It's kind of fascinating to see the hormonal cycles that are running, that are just, you know, teaching you, now it is time to fight. Now it is time to go out there and be part of your biological imperative. It is time to kill. And it's at this point most people will have the kind of nurturance and family around that will encourage you not necessarily to have to follow that path. You know? But when they don't, they wind up at Kent Robert Shaw's door, right? And you wind up bringing your child in for treatment and saying, I don't know what's wrong with my kid. They just keep getting into fights.
Yeah, I think that this aspect of, there's part of our animal nature that's very aggressive and has appropriate aggression put in us. And I think as adults, that's how we channel that into being assertive, and we get our needs met and we set boundaries with people. So a lot of our primitive, you know, reptilian and primate aggression that, again, you see on PBS channels is channeled into more appropriate assertive behavior. But I think as anyone can realize that we have a part of our personality, because I know when I'm looking at somebody headbutt somebody in the soccer match or something, or I see a sports figure lose their temper, it's very exciting in a way. So I think vicariously a lot of us go around, particularly with sporting events, movies and the like, a lot of these characters have very explosive, angry outbursts. And I think there's a part of us that gets a subliminal kind of enjoyment about seeing other people explode like that. It's thrilling and exciting, though slightly dangerous. Certainly if you're seeing it on the screen or you're seeing it somewhere else, it's safer to enjoy.
And this is Armand DeMille with you at The Positive Mind with Dr. Kent Robert Shaw and Dr. Christine Ulrich. We're going to be back with you in a couple of minutes, my friend. I've got a little music for you that I picked for Michael.
Hi, I'm Scott Elliott. I'm the director of Three Penny Opera. Come check it out and keep listening to WBAI New York.
Instead of staying home in bed at night behaving,
they want love. They want love.
Chasing up the alley with the sentimental craven.
Yeah, I love WBAI.
TalkBack is your gathering place for the free and fair exchange of information and ideas, heard here Monday through Thursday from 3 until 5 in the afternoon. I'm Hugh Hamilton. Join me as we explore the issues and events making news across the nation and around the world with expert guests, insightful analysis, and, of course, your comments, questions, and observations. That's TalkBack right here on WBAI New York.
This is Armand DeMille with you with The Positive Mind. That was Billie Holiday. And Crowd, Mean to Me. Mean to Me. Of course it's Mean to Me. You didn't get that one, Kent.
I didn't get it.
You didn't get it at the beginning. I should guess what music I'll be picking for this. Mean to Me, you know? And of course, Mean to Me is what you say. Why is he so mean to me? You know, and he's so mean to you because he's got meanness in his bones. And why does he got meanness in his bones? Mm-hmm. You think if everybody was rich, they wouldn't get mean? The rich people don't get as mean as the poor people, you know. They don't have as many frustrations. So what do you think predisposes a person, Kent?
Well, I think that one of the things you, as we said, the hyperarousal, I think people who have a great deal of adrenaline and endorphin, not endorphins, but adrenaline and they're, you know, stressed out, a lot of stresses of life, their nervous system is like a guitar string, you know, or violin string that's high strung. And I think people with all sorts of stresses like that are predisposed to get triggered by people and events on the outside. So their nervous system system. And again, situations that people are in predispose them. Poverty, anxieties, medical problems, chronic pain, things like that will cause people to be at a high level of stress. And it's known that that can trigger anger in both humans and animals.
But the very same high level of stress in two people doing the same job. You know what I mean? I mean, they could have two different postal workers, right? And one postal worker will... Not just that postal workers do, but, you know, postal work is kind of postal work. And you get two different postal workers, and one of them goes off the edge, and the other one is doing the same job, just following along, you know? So it doesn't account for it. The stress itself doesn't account for it. It has to be something predisposing even the stress levels. It's like alcohol, like Christina was saying. You know, sugar, you believe, low sugar?
Yeah, low sugar can trigger that as well.
Hypoglycemia.
Hypoglycemia, and I mean, everybody has made me sense that. If you are really getting hungry, you get not only hungry, that's like, really, you could kill somebody.
Right, irritable. Real irritable. Some people.
Oh, yeah, I'm irritable 3 times a day. I'm constantly hungry, and I get irritable. I say, you know, PMS is only 3 or 4 times a month for women. I'm irritable constantly whenever I get hungry.
Whenever you get hungry, you get irritable.
Oh, yeah, very grouchy.
Yeah, you see? You see? That's why polar bears, bipolar bears. Okay, so hunger. Now, it's interesting because hunger usually relates to low blood sugar, and low blood sugar is one of the causes, and on the other hand, extremely high blood sugar with the infusion of alcohol, right, seems to be a trigger. So it's sugar coming in from both ends.
It's like...
either lack of sugar or the flooding of sugar.
Yeah. Things get out of balance, simply.
Sugar, by the way, alcohol is sugar for people who don't know it. It's the purest form of sugar. You know, and it comes in and it gets in there and then all of a sudden, boom, you know, I don't have my controls. It takes the gates down. But again, there are some guys who drink and they don't explode and there are other people who drink and they do explode. There are some guys who are hungry and they don't get like Kent and there are other people who are hungry and they do get like Kent. So what is this difference? What is the thing that makes it happen? I think we have other factors. Let's look at what happens afterwards. And maybe it'll tell us a little something about what happens before. In the person with the intermittent explosive disorder, what is the one key characteristic that always seems to be there at the end of the explosion?
Well, certainly a sense of remorse is often following it, in the sense that the person realizes after they've calmed down, after they're no longer in the red zone, that they overreacted to something, and they realize that they were out of control at that time and lashing out in a way that they now feel doesn't feel right to who they think they are, which is somebody who's well-civilized, well-controlled, and the like, as opposed to the sociopath who has no remorse that we mentioned before. That would be the hypo-arousal. The hyper-arousal person, once they're starting to calm down, they look back and think about the episode, and it doesn't feel good in terms of their sense of self as somebody who's potentially scary to other people, somebody who's potentially hurtful to other people. That doesn't seem like where most people want to see themselves. So sometimes people can minimize the episode, or they'll just go through a great deal of self-beratement over the episode and not understand why they reacted so angrily.
Well, I know a woman, you know, again, someone who came for treatment. I know a woman who is very, very angry and has these intermittent explosions, but after she has the explosion, she'll generally tear a place apart. She will, she'll start screaming, she'll yelling, no considerations for everybody around. Then she'll storm out of a room, but she does not have remorse. And she's not a psychopath. She gets overwhelmed. She gets taken over, and she explodes. And once she explodes, she now feels like she's the victim, and nobody understands her, and it's everybody else's fault. Would you say that falls under the manic category of disorder, you know, or borderline?
Certainly, perhaps borderline. And borderline, one of the simple things about this diagnosis of borderline is the inability for people to see areas of gray. So within that black or white, all or nothing reaction would be angry reactions when people perceive that particularly another person is doing them great harm and, you know, and did something very malicious, even though it was could have been much more innocuous and the like. And certainly the paranoid personality person would also react in that way, because they would see a kind of maliciousness and intent of doing something that the spouse or the child or the stranger on the street, the stranger on the street who just accidentally walked into you, may evoke in a paranoid and explosive reaction because of the perception of this person did it on purpose, or the person did it on purpose because they see I wear ties and I'm a shrink and whatever. So I'm not just seeing it as a simple accident. I think it was directed towards me, which is the way paranoids often see things.
This is Armando Mill. Telephone number here, 212-209-2900. You've been on both sides of it, my friends. You know, you might want to have something to say about it. 212-209-2900. You know, to be a person who is on the side of being violent, you know, you talk about shame and remorse, and the reason I talk about the after effect of it, I believe if you have shame after you're explosive, then you probably walk around with it all the time. And I am saying that one of the predispositions to intermittent explosive disorder is a sense of guilt. Now, if it's not paranoia, paranoia is one. If you know somebody who's paranoid, and by paranoid I mean extra sharp, extra vigilant, kind of talking about what's being done to them, you know. If you see somebody who's got these qualities, they are potentially explosive. But on the other hand, the person who is shameful, which may be the same person, but the person who has this basic inward shame, I think sometimes is one of the most potentially explosive people. And that's one of the things they say about people who have outbursts when they suddenly grab a rifle and start shooting. He is such a nice guy. He was such a sweet guy. And usually that niceness and sweetness means he was walking around and he was a shameful guy. He kept his head down. He kept himself back. Nobody saw him. He made himself disappear. So the very symptom that we have at the end of the outburst, which is shame and guilt, may be the very thing that gets it to go.
Yeah, I think that particularly what sets off shame-based people who go around with shame is criticism. That is really the outside thing. It's rather innocuous, mild criticism will cause somebody who has inner sense of shame to be explosively wounded and go into a inner shame spiral and need to react very angrily and hostily to defend against this wounding, horrible criticism that may not have been a horrible
criticism.
Well,
that's a really interesting thing. There are some people who do carry that. What you're saying is anybody who is oversensitive to criticism, even if the criticism is mean, right? Still, the oversensitivity to criticism usually comes from somebody who is living a shame-based life. And therefore, if you put those two together, they live a shame-based life, and they get a little criticism, and they overreact to the criticism, they'll do anything. You know, you cut me off when I was talking, I saw the way you looked at me, I heard what you said, you didn't have to say that, and boom, they explode. So what we're seeing is shame. What we're seeing is guilt. And almost every time we see that, an explosive person feels bad on the inside. There's a part, unless it's something else, unless it's chemical, unless it's some other basis, we're saying that most people with intermittent explosive disorder probably are carrying around a sense of shame, which, if in therapy could be explored, we might be able to undo it, you know, and be able to undo the whole syndrome. Because if you don't have the shame, you're not so sensitive. And if you're not so sensitive, you don't react as strongly.
Yeah, I think after the outburst, instead of putting your head in a hole, you should consider really going to therapy and do something about it.
I blow up. And I've had enough people come to me who say it, you know. I blow up. I explode. I want to do something about it. You know, and it's music to my ears, because every time one person decides to tackle their own explosiveness, it means generations are going to be spared. It means, oh, you're one of those leftovers from prehistoric times who are just kind of haven't gotten the point yet, and you can't get it. Let me give you a hand with that.
I think another aspect other than shame is people, ironically, who have issues with being assertive. I mean, a lot of people don't understand that a lot of explosively angry people at the core sometimes, now this isn't necessarily strangers and road rage, this is in relationships, they have difficulty being assertive. So then part of the explosive reaction is not that I'm just reacting here on Wednesday afternoon about the insult or the something that Armand just did, but something that happened on Monday that I stuffed and I kept to myself, and something that happened last Friday, and something that happened the week before. So all these episodes, rather than me being assertive and talking openly about my angry feelings at that time, are stored up so that on Wednesday at 1:30, when I do get angry, I have 5 episodes of anger built up inside me that explodes out. And if I learn in therapy how to deal with each of those episodes as they come up, there's not so much built up animosity and anger and resentment that the explosion occurs in. Many couples and many parents do that. Again, when they do get angry, it's explosive, and there's then a laundry list of about 2 weeks worth of crimes or misdemeanors that are brought up, and often the other person would say, why didn't you bring it up then, or why are you bringing it up now?
Well, you know, a lot of people cannot identify themselves when they do get tense and angry. A lot of people in early life decided that being emotional was not a good thing, so they cut off their senses of their emotions, and they cannot sense when they are angry. They can't really feel it, but their body takes the toll. So what happens is somebody does something that makes you angry, and one little muscle decides to tighten up, and one little secretion in your stomach. And then that stays there. That tension stays there. You've got no way to even identify. I don't even know what's wrong. I got a little upset stomach today, is what you may say. And the next day, another thing might happen that might feel like an insult. And since you can't identify it, you can't tell when you get angry, it adds up and it takes another place. And then the next day, another thing happens where somebody else insults you in some way. And you feel it, and you just feel this tension in your body. And you say, oh, I must be working too hard because I'm getting tense. But you don't connect the fact that it is something in you that is being held back, that is an act that, you know, something should be taken care of and attended to. And therefore, of course, it's like a rubber band. You keep pulling it back further and further and further. It's going to explode. It's going to get fired. It's going to wind up doing it, and it's going to do it at the harm of somebody, yourself or somebody else.
And often it comes along with the belief system, I'm a person that is not angry. I'm a person that is always controlled. And so people run around with that belief system, and then all in a sudden they have that outburst out of nowhere. They don't know where it comes from. And of course they feel ashamed and shocked afterwards, because this was kind of the different self that came out. Armand said, like, possessed by the devil, and that is how those people feel.
Well, it's interesting you say that, Christine, because there are some people who are so expert at putting out fires that they see anger and all they want to do is make sure that that anger gets mitigated. They want to make sure that anger goes away. And over again, they are constantly just putting out every fire. If they see somebody get angry, they're going to tell them, oh, you should calm down. And they see somebody else getting angry, oh, you should calm down. Oh, how can I get you? You're so upset. And these are the ones who are, most firemen are like this, by the way, that they are putting out fires all the time, and what they don't know is while they're putting out that fire, a fire is growing inside them. But they have such a thing about anger, and explosive anger especially, that finally what happens is they explode, and they have such enormous shame, because it is that anger is not only, it's verboten. Verboten?
Verboten.
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 Verboten. Says Christina Ulrich from Germany, who gives us a hand with our occasional translations. So how do you learn to deal with it? One of the things that you do is you learn to identify it when it happens by feeling it when it happens. Another is to have a therapist around to talk about, would be a terrific idea. If you have a friend who doesn't advise you, you might have a good idea too. Friends who advise you and tell you what to do are not necessarily as good as a friend who listens to you and what you have to say, and they say, you know, thank you very much for sharing that with me, and they don't have to cross-talk. They don't have to talk to you about it.
Well, I think that out there are also enablers. There are spouses of of people who are putting up with explosive outbursts that you think that a self-respecting person wouldn't allow themselves to be treated in such a disrespectful manner. So I think some of the people we talked about about feeling safe with somebody angry like that, but I think also some depressives sometimes gravitate towards people like this, and it fits in with their low sense of self-esteem, that at some unconscious level, I deserve to be treated like that every once in a while because I'm a piece of crap, and so I deserve to be yelled at every once in a while. And you would think somebody who has good self-esteem would have good self-respect and not allow themselves to be dissed.
Well, you make a very important point there. Make an important point that in some way, being related to somebody who is explosive affirms your worthlessness. Now, what kind of person would be that? Very often, the child of alcoholics.
Yes.
You know?
Sure. And, it sounds like we're blaming the victim. And obviously when we're talking about children of parents, they are truly victims. But when you're talking about adults and adult relationships and spouses, and now we're getting into the area of battered wives and the like, and Nicole Simpson and O.J. Simpson, and people who don't stick up for themselves and almost give license to this person. It's not making it okay, but by telling the person in no uncertain terms that you have a divorce attorney on speed dial is somewhat colluding and enabling this behavior that, again, you would think a self-respecting person would say, this is not going to happen. And even with the apologies afterward, the apologies mean nothing if it happens again.
And I think, therefore, we are here to tell you that there's a way to get help, that you don't have to deal with it. And a lot of times what Kent just described, people are not aware of it. They don't understand it. It's running on some level without awareness. So we are here to help you to understand it, to understand both sides.
And that's the idea of the positive mind here on WBAI. My guests, Dr. Kent Robert Shaw and Dr. Christina Ulrich, who helped me put this together today. Tomorrow I have a very, very exciting show. You may have heard about the book, The New Feminine Psychology. We'll be presenting the author by phone from California tomorrow. And it's just amazing. Here's this brand new book that's kind of sweeping all over the world. It's in, you know, one of the most popular books. And I find this person, and she winds up being married to one of my great teachers at Albert Einstein College of Medicine. And they just coincidentally happen to be together, and they're at the other side of the world, and it's like they're in California. You've heard of California? It's all the way over there somewhere. And we will continue with this kind of exciting thing. I wish I did have a chance to take some of your calls today, but I'm not going to be able to. Maybe tomorrow, but I'm not sure. Just one last thing about this intermittent explosive disorder that I wanted to mention to you, Kent. You know, it is also known as the militant episode disorder. And that people see it as a disorder that goes along with kleptomania and pyromania. They say that this impulse control, lack of impulse control, which is this explosive disorder, is the equivalent of kleptomania, which is stealing without thinking about it, and pyromania, which is this setting fires. So we get back to fires.
Yeah, I think the DSM-4, the psychiatric manual, sees these in the category of impulse control disorders. The impulse, the angry impulse, which we talked about today, but obviously the other two, the impulse to steal without thinking of the consequences, the impulse to set fires. These are the other ones within this category. These impulse control disorders, which again means you're not thinking about the consequences. And I don't know, again, as you can imagine, people with this intermittent anger, the one episode that happens per month, I believe, undoes a lot of the warmth, kindness, love, and gentleness in people's, you know, behaviors and personalities and social relationships. So even though we're talking about 7-10 episodes per year, not only just the financial damage, but the human damage, because who wants to be close to somebody who they fear has this kind of potential to hurt?
Well, this is Armando Mill with you at the Father of Mind. Thank you very much for being with us. Thank you, Kent Robert Shaw. Thank you, Christina Oerich. We will be back with you tomorrow at 1 p.m., my friends. A new feminine psychology tomorrow. And I'm leaving you with a little Lester Young. Mean to Me by Lester Young, before with Billie Holiday, of course. You can go to thepositivemind.com and get a copy of today's program, which will be downloaded, and you'll be able to hear it soon. Bye-bye for now, my friends.